In high school, did you know you wanted to be a lawyer?
I did. In those days, they had in school a vacant period they called a study hall, where you didn't have a class. You went to the library, such as it was, supposed to be working on your lessons. Well, bored one day, I was looking around through the library books, and I found a book on occupations and professions. It sort of described different ones. What I was really deeply interested then in was radio. I had lied about my age until I think I was 16 or long in there, and taken a correspondence course from, it's called the National Radio Institute. Two of my close friends, we used to just love to draw diagrams of radios and make little radios ourselves and so forth. But I could see, looking around Walters, the only guy that was making a living doing anything with radios was a guy who had a little hole-in-the-wall repair shop, and he obviously was not making very much money. And I decided that, as interesting as that was, I certainly didn't want to be doing that the rest of my life. And I came on to a chapter in that book about lawyers. That sounded interesting. I wasn't quite sure what lawyers did. But from that moment, from the time I was a sophomore in high school, I decided, well, that's what I'm going to be. I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm not sure, but I think I must have connected it with people in town who I saw were lawyers, there were two or three of them, and they also were in politics. I think surely that must have all been sort of tied together in my mind.
Did politics interest you in high school?
Well, I wasn't that interested in, you know, who's running for sheriff or whatever, nor were my folks. But I was a candidate my senior year to be the president of the student council, which was a school-wide vote. I was elected by a school-wide vote. And the most wonderful thing, when the junior high and the high school all met once a week, I think on Wednesday, for an assembly, I always presided. Often we'd have some outside speaker. The school had paid a little to come and lecture on something or other. But it started with me walking to the lectern and the auditorium, which doubled as also the gym. When I did, it just got to be some crazy habit. The students just cheered and cheered and cheered interminably. I came to like that quite a bit.
Future Farmers of America played a role in your life.
You're required in high school to either take shop, I think they called it manual training, carpentry kind of stuff, or you could take what was called vocational agriculture. You joined an organization called the Future Farmers of America. Well, I decided to go that way. As part of the thing, you had projects. You raised some pigs and showed them at the state fair, or raised a calf. A bunch of us each raised chickens, and I also became an expert chicken judge. 2 years in a row, there was a three-person team. We were the state champion chicken judging team at the state fair in Oklahoma City. My dad, he thought that was really silly, and why I became an expert at chickens. But I was, because our Future Farmers of America instructor was somehow a chicken or poultry expert.
Weren't there speech contests?
Yes. I was in the wheat harvest after my junior year. In the wheat harvest, I started out driving a tractor, and then I graduated eventually to driving a truck, hauling the wheat to the elevator from the field, driving back and forth in the truck. I got to thinking about a classmate of mine, Dan Bigby, had the preceding year been elected president of the student council. He had also won the state champion Future Farmers of America oratorical contest, which was held every year at what was then called Oklahoma A&M, Oklahoma State University at Stillwater. For some reason, I just got to thinking about it that summer, and I think, well, I ought to do that. So when I got home, I did both. I was elected president of the student council, and also did my own research and wrote a speech, the title of which was Can Our Earth Feed Its People? A lot in it about Malthus and about the population explosion and so forth. And the answer was yes, but it's going to take better farming. So I went to Stillwater to the state tournament that year. You had to go out and make a speech. There were three judges, I believe. And they asked you questions. You had to answer questions extemporaneously. And I won. So then I was going to the regional tournament, which was to be held down at Texas A&M. Two speech professors at Oklahoma A&M sat down with me and had me do my speech again. And they recorded it. In those days, it was on a wire recorder. And they played it back to me, which turned out to be about as humiliating an experience as I ever had to hear my funny little Western twangy kid's voice. It was a great shock, but they helped me get a little better prepared. And I went down to Texas A&M, and I won there in that regional thing, and then went to Atlanta, Georgia for the national tournament, and a guy beat me primarily, I think, because he had a better topic, which was how can we keep more doctors in rural areas and small towns. So I placed second in the national. But that was a great experience for me, learning to think on my feet and to think about social issues and so forth, and also begin to learn how to speak publicly.
What year, then, did you graduate from high school?
1948.
Was it in there somewhere that you met your first wife, LaDonna?
That's right. My senior year in high school, she had grown up south of Walters and west of the little town of Temple, so about 6 or 7 miles south of Walters on the farm. Her parents were Comanche Indians. I mean, her mother was. And her grandparents, who raised her, were Comanche Indians. Really traditional. For example, her grandfather, whose name was Tavitait, had long braids still, and he spoke very little English. Her grandmother also wore long braids and a traditional kind of Comanche dress. She was a Christian, though. The grandmother, wonderful woman, Wicca Tavitait, and he was not a Christian. He had eagle medicine. He could cure certain things. And he was also a peyote roader. He kept peyote there at the house. In those days, you still saw a lot of old Indians who wore long braids and who had earrings and had a colored part in the middle of their hair, colored red or yellow. Their braids had felt wrapped in them. And you'd see in some places, like there's an old man lived near us, an old man Kadina, we called him, who kept a teepee in his yard. He was a peyote leader. Often at night when we were sleeping outside, we could hear the peyote people singing. LaDonna had been living with a sister in Oklahoma City, and she came back down to Walters, and she and her aunt, who was more like a sister to her, they had been raised together there on the farm. They took an apartment in town right up over the post office across the street from the high school in Walters. And these two girls, this was a really very unusual kind of thing, but there wasn't any high school right where they lived. They had to take the bus for a long ways one way or another. So I met her right away when she came there, and we dated all that year. And then I went off to school, and at the end of my first year at the university and her last year in high school, we got married.
So you were about 19 years old.
I was 19 when we were married. She was also 19. And in Oklahoma, in those days, I don't know what it is now, a man had to be 21, or a girl 18, to get married, or you had to have your parents' consent. I went home practically every weekend, hitchhiked home from Norman, where the University of Oklahoma is, down to Walters to see LaDonna. At the end of that year, my parents had moved out on the farm, and we went to see them one night to tell them we were going to get married, and my mother cried. LaDonna's mother later cried, too. She thought LaDonna was marrying beneath her. And my dad, really, the best way he could show his disapproval was he just got mad. He said, well, that's the end of your law school. And I said, no, it isn't, because both of us can work, and we'll be as well off or better. So later, he had to take me in. He had to drive me in to get the license. He had to sign for me. They were living then in Comanche County on a farm. We went to the county clerk's office in the courthouse in Lawton. We hardly said a word to each other. He was sullen and mad. About the time we got out of the pickup, he said to me, by God, don't you ever ask me for anything. And I said, well, when have I ever? And both of us, of course, that was really an error. But he went up and signed for me, and that's where I got married.
Was LaDonna born in a teepee?
No, her grandmother was. Her grandmother, Wicca Tavitait. The way they spell it on the rolls is W-I-C-K-K-I-E, but it actually is pronounced Wicca, Wicca. Tavitait is her husband's name, therefore her last name. She was born in a teepee in the yard of Quanah Parker. By then, those cattlemen had built him a big house up by the Wichita Mountains by Cache. They called it the Star House. It's been moved, but it's still up there. She was born in a teepee out there in his yard.
Quanah Parker, briefly tell us who that was.
Quanah Parker was the son of a captive white woman, Cynthia Ann Parker, captured by the Comanches. And the father, white people call him Pedan O'Kona, an Indian Comanche war chief. His mother, Cynthia Ann Parker, was recaptured, but he stayed with the Comanches. They couldn't capture him. He became a war chief. He became a leader in the Comanche Society. If he had followers, as a young man, he took people on raids into Texas and so forth. By the time they were moved forcibly onto the reservation up near Fort Sill, the federal government wanted somebody to be in charge, and so they really chose him as a chief. There was no one chief of the Comanches ever. He was designated sort of as the chief. He came in contact, he wanted to, with his white relatives down in Texas. LaDonna's great-grandfather, a man named Tocoyan, was a contemporary of Quanah Parker's, well, a little older. And he was still living in Oklahoma when people had cars. And this old man, Tocoyan, he remembered he was a captive himself. He remembered that he had been captured somewhere around San Antonio. He remembered his name. His name was Ramirez. And he had a cross that he had when he was captured as a boy. And a great uncle of LaDonna's, Frank Tabatai, said to him, "Why don't we drive down there and see if we can find any of your folks?" He wouldn't. Quanah Parker did, and so there's a lot of white Parkers and their Comanche Parkers that they have reunions and so forth now. LaDonna's grandmother, Wegetabitai, she liked Quanah Parker. LaDonna's grandfather did not. He was of a different band, the Yabaruka band, which means brood eater. He thought Quanah Parker was, I mean, his parents had taught him that. Quanah Parker was too much like a white man, that when they stole a bunch of horses or whatever, the leader ought to let everybody else choose first which ones they wanted. But his father had said to him, Quanah Parker always, he'd choose the best himself. So there was a difference in the family about who liked Quanah Parker and who did not.
Are you of any Native American descent?
Not that I know of, but I was always fascinated with the Comanche language, history, and culture. I couldn't get enough of it. So once I met LaDonna, I spent a great deal of time with her. She and I one time did something, and we even lost our notes. We never did anything with it. We decided to try to catalog wild plants that Comanches used for food or for whatever, for making soap or making a soap-like substance and various things. And so we went around talking to old people. One person, for example, we interviewed was Quanah Parker's last wife. Her name was Tope. He had several wives at the same time. We say, you know, what was the plant? When did it flower? And what did it look like? There were two kinds of onions. And there was a potato-like plant. For example, a yucca, you could take the roots and it would make suds like soap. And when hackberries were ripe and what you did with them and so forth. We did all that. And then I think we tried to write it up for the Oklahoma Historical Society magazine, but somehow got sidetracked. Maybe it's because I went to the Senate or something.